All right, the Shilling Show continues here. It's a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. David Murata is our guest, the president of Murata Wealth Management. Today's topic is the debt ceiling. By the way, he's online at muratahonmoney.com. Lots of really good information there, as well as a way to contact David. But they do a lot of blog posts that are really significant and important information. David, welcome back. Great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We're talking about the debt ceiling today. You know, this is so weird because most people are completely disconnected from this conversation. I mean, people who are aware, like most members of this listening audience, understand this is a huge issue we're dealing with. But there's a lot of people, it's like, well, this doesn't affect me in my everyday life. And therefore, well, I'm not going to worry about it because we'll just let them work it out. They always have, they always will. So why don't we talk about, first of all, what it is?
Yeah, the debt ceiling is the total amount of money that the United States government is authorized to borrow to meet its existing legal obligations. Interestingly enough, bonds are dished out both to the public here in the United States, to foreign governments, and also to U.S. domestic agencies. So sometimes the debt is debt that's owed to themselves. The debt limit was created in 1917, so it's been around a long time, and it was trying to limit the borrowing that we could do in World War I. And Congress has approved 102 separate debt limit modifications. We've approved 20 distinct changes to the debt limit since 2001.
Wow. That's a lot. Now, we think about the debt limit, and I want to ask, how did we get here? Like where we're at today? Because this is important. It's instructive to understand how we got to this place. We're in what appears to be a crisis, but I'm not sure if it actually is. So how did we get here?
Yeah, the U.S. debt in 1980 was just 26% of gross domestic product. Since 2008, economic growth has slowed, and for every additional dollar of growth in the economy, the federal government has borrowed $3.16. So that's where the problem comes. Recently, the debt's increased sharply as a result of the $6 trillion spent in the COVID release. So COVID is the major problem of why we're spending money like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
COVID's an interesting study in how you can prepare for emergency situations. When the situation actually arises, you'll do something different.
Mm-hmm.
So the World Health Organization had a plan for a pandemic, which did not include shutting down the economy. They didn't think anyone could shut down the economy. But when the time came, most countries' politicians shut down vast portions of their economies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only Sweden was an exception to that rule, and Sweden didn't shut down their economy. They had a plan, and they stuck to their plan.
So COVID, I don't think people understand the magnitude of not COVID itself, which had its own magnitude, but the lockdown policies and the financial responses to COVID, how much they impacted all of us financially and, in fact, this debt ceiling that we're up against.
When we decided to shut down our own economy, we knew it was going to be a financial impact on millions and millions and millions of people, and we started just throwing money around because that's what the federal government does. They don't have a plan for who is going to get the money. They just start passing a lot of different bills in which a lot of different organizations get the money. We gave it to businesses, we gave it to Medicare, we gave it to poverty relief, we gave it to individuals. You know, we did all of that just throwing money around. We gave it to students. And so all of that throwing money around helped solve the short-term problem of having shut down the economy, but it also caused a hyperinflation and a massive debt.
So we were worried, and you and I have been talking about the whole inflation bomb for years, and I was thinking to myself, and I probably said it out loud in talking to you, you know, it looks like this is never going to happen. Like we can just continue on this path. And then all of a sudden, I guess we had enough of a jolt and within such a compressed period of time that what we'd been talking about, which was inevitable, actually happened.
Yes, $6 trillion and printing 40% of all the money that's ever been printed, 43% or something like that, caused inflation finally, and it was massive. And so we went from, you know, almost 0% inflation up to 8 and 9% inflation. And this has been true in all the countries that had as their response shutting down their economies and printing massive deficit spending. It happened to Canada, it happened to the United Kingdom, and it happened to the United States.
Were there any countries that were able to avoid this? I mean, maybe a third world country? I mean, or did everyone get caught up in this simply because they're part of a world economy?
You know, the best indicator we have is Sweden, because Sweden didn't shut down their economy. They kept their primary schools open. They didn't have face mask mandates, mm-hmm. all of that. And this, in the Swedish strategy, has gone from, you know, being called a disaster to a cautionary tale to now it's called a Scandinavian success. You know, it's interesting to see that, because Sweden had their own commission in which they reviewed what happened, and they stated the no lockdown strategy was fundamentally reasonable, and the state should never interfere with the rights and freedoms of its citizens more than absolutely necessary. You know, this is Sweden doing all of that. The commission also supported keeping the schools open, you know, because Sweden didn't have the learning loss that we had in the United States. Of we had 2 years of lockdown, and students apparently only learned 1 year of material during that 2 years. And so our school system has fallen behind. You know, the coronavirus was never money versus lives. That was always a false dichotomy, because it was really lives versus lives. And the lives that have been lost as a result of all of the lockdown, the lost livelihood, yeah. the lost learning in the schools, all of that has been a life versus life. In Sweden, they didn't have any excess deaths as a result of not having done a lockdown. Mm. In fact, they're one of the second best Scandinavian countries, which has some of the best results in all of the world, because they didn't lock down. I took a look recently at the vaccine rates by state mm-hmm. versus the deaths and incidence of infection.
Yes.
I couldn't see anything, because everyone I know mostly got the vaccine, then they got COVID, mm-hmm. and then they went on from there. It wasn't like COVID even made it less of a hospitalization. The reason why we have less hospitalizations as time continues is simply because we've learned how the disease works and we've learned how to treat it.
We're talking with David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com. The topic is the debt ceiling. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open at 434-977-1070. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Stay with the Shilling Show. All right, Shilling Show into our final segment for today. David Murata is our guest. We're talking about the debt ceiling and the accompanying effects on the economy. All of this is all tied together. It's such a big subject, but we're just getting started on it. Let's go to the phones, and Mike has a comment or a question. Mike, you're on with David Murata. Go straight ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that even in your personal finances, people know if you incur a lot of debt, it's not good. If you know, sooner or later, you don't have to pay it, or you end up bankrupt. So it's no different from the country. But I had a quick question as far as the banks failing. As far as a regional bank or community bank or financial institute, I think all of them are backed by the government to a certain amount. Is it any difference between three? Is one safer than the other? And I'll get off and listen for Dave's comment.
Yeah, Mike, thank you very much.
If you have FDIC insurance and your deposits are smaller than $250,000, it doesn't matter what bank you do. Go to the best bank that has customer service. Our change within Murata Wealth Management was to make sure that our clients who had over $250,000 put it in a money market, or put it so they had less than $250,000. You know, currently you can get your best interest rates from 6 to 9 month CDs. Beyond 9 months, the interest rate goes down. So if you want to lock up your money longer, they'll actually pay you less. That's an indication that the markets, at least, think that the interest rates will be lower in the future mm-hmm. than they think it will be now.
Yeah, that's a very interesting indicator. Let's go back to the phones, 977-1070. David Murata is our guest. And Nancy, you're on with David. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. You have said, Mr. Murata, before that you don't agree with buying gold. I think that's true. What about now with inflation and our money not being worth very much? Thanks very much for the opportunity. I'll take your answer offline.
All right. Good question. Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah. Investors think that the way you judge an investment is by its standard deviation of its movements up and down and by its average return. Gold's average return is inflation, and its standard deviation is incredibly wild. So it can lose 75% of its value in 22 years as it did from 1980 to 2002. So gold goes up and down, and gold, there isn't a good reason for it going up and down. It goes up and down based on the whim, and you'd think it would go up and then it goes down, and you'd think it would go down and then it would go up. So that's why we don't invest in gold. Additionally, the capital gains rate on gold is taxed as a collectible, which is 28%.
Wow.
And I just don't think that's a fair tax either. Rather than putting money in gold that doesn't do anything, it doesn't do any real work, I think putting it into the stock market where you've got shares in a company that's working for you, that will make inflation plus 6.5%. Recently, the economy has slowed a little bit, so it might be less than 6.5%, but it's going to make inflation plus something. And I think that's safer than putting it in gold over the long period of time.
All right. So as we're talking about the debt ceiling, and we talked about the impact of COVID, is there anything else that we missed there before we go on?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Bill Barr had an editorial in yesterday's Wall Street Journal in which he said, if you like Trump's policies, don't support Trump. He said Trump would be unable to deliver on Trump's own agenda. He said, among other things, that Trump conceded to Anthony Fauci's destructive lockdowns, and he failed to examine the details well enough to adopt a consistent message. Interestingly enough, this has all impacted our economic freedom scores. We've got, just have that article in draft. It will come out on our website soon. And the Heritage Foundation said that since the last couple of years, economic growth has slowed because of the COVID lockdown. Mm-hmm. And it's because countries had an abrupt and short-sighted renunciation of the principles of economic freedom. Yeah, they just decided we weren't going to do that. We were going to do something that would be more draconian. And, you know, I really wish... You know, our country overreacted to COVID, and I really wish that we could conclude that we'd overreacted.
Mm.
But I don't even think we have that consensus in America. We kind of look at the draconian measures that China has taken, and we think, well, they're overreacting, but we're not overreacting. We did it just right. And I don't think we did it just right. I think we shouldn't have shut down the economy. We shouldn't have spent $6 trillion. We should have let people have the freedom to do what they wanted to do.
So the cat's out of the bag, though. The money's gone. I mean, there's probably still huge pots of it sitting around in various governments. Even locally here, they were handing out $1,000 a month to people just because they had all the extra money. So, I mean, does that get soaked up? I'm trying to think of some analogy. If you throw some sponges in the water, does the money eventually get soaked up and we're back to where we were, or are we just stuck forever?
Well, Biden has just now conceded that the pandemic is over. It ends actually on Thursday of this week. Every 90 days, he's been pushing it back and extending the pandemic. I was very surprised that he continued to extend it so long. Yes, defaulting on our debt has never been done, and we don't know what will happen. Previously in 2011, the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department formulated what they would do if we began defaulting, because the president has the authority to do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. So the president should have a plan that doesn't mean we'll default, but it means that we can continue to operate for a while. But also, if the debt continues to grow, we also don't know what will happen. You know, at what point does increasing the debt become less irresponsible than defaulting on it? No matter what we do and what happens as a result, you know that in politics, both sides will blame the other party. So you know that's going to happen. But what the Republicans are trying to do is they're trying to have increasing the debt tied to some legislation that will decrease the debt. And that's also not unusual. You know, if you look at the last 50 times the debt ceiling has been raised, 24 of them, or 48%, have also been tied to some legislation to lower the debt. Several of those have been by Democrats. The 1993 Clinton tax hike, the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, and the Pelosi pay-as-you-go, PAYGO. Yeah. Those were all Democrat riders that were on raising the debt ceiling, but also trying to decrease the debt. More commonly, it comes from the Republicans, but that's not, you know, that's not an indicator of anything. But 48% of the time, it's been passed with some accompanying legislation. This one is so big and not legislatively passed because the debt relief just kept going and kept going, and every 90 days, Biden would re-up it. And sometimes his forgiving of student debt was just done by fiat. That I think the Republicans have a right to say we need a piece of legislation that accompanies this raising of the debt ceiling. And I think that's a legitimate thing to do.
So now we're in a game of chicken because Biden has already stated up front that he's not going to negotiate. is just going to sit there. And I think what's happened in the past, at least when the Republicans have played brinksmanship, they lose every time in the PR battle. The Democrats are better at saying, look at those nasty Republicans because all the federal workers are suffering. Now I've seen Kane and Warner putting out a legislation to protect federal employees and shut down and things like that. So they always seem to win the PR battle. So where does this go when you have one person who says, I'm not negotiating?
Right. And they shouldn't win the PR battle. You should be able to negotiate with them. I don't know if the Republicans have nerves of steel or not, or whether or not they'll be able to do that. But I do think they have the right to do that, and they have the right to some concessions, and then negotiating those concessions is what they should be doing.
So we've got other things going on surrounding this. The threats are that this is going to crash the economy. This is what I'm hearing out of the administration, that the economy is going to crash, and that this is going to lead to massive layoffs, that the world economy is going to get hurt, and so on and so forth. So what actually happens? What's going to be the effect of this if there is no agreement and if the Republicans have nerves of steel and we just go on for a while?
If the Republicans hold their ground, the Democrats will come to the negotiating table. Mm-hmm. I really believe that.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to see default on our debt on the one hand. On the other hand, current debt is 132% of gross domestic product,
mm-hmm.
and that's ridiculous. That puts us in a camp of other countries that have debt and deficit that are much too high. If I just look down the top slots, it's Japan, Greece, Venezuela, Italy, the United States, Spain, and France.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's what we would call the pig countries,
yeah.
Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, along with France and Japan and Venezuela, and those are the countries that are high in debt and deficit. Coming up close to that are Canada and Great Britain, and Canada and Great Britain have both been removed from our economic freedom investing because their high debt and deficit now mean their economic growth will be so slow that we don't think companies in those countries are going to be a good investment.
Wow. How things have changed in a relatively short period of time. But you and I have talked about the economic freedom for a long time, and we knew we were heading down this path. The other countries going in the same direction. Is there anybody who's going in the right direction? Obviously, there's somebody on your list who's doing a good job.
Yes, there is one country who gained its economic freedom as a significant outlier to the last year, and that's Taiwan. Taiwan has actually gained in economic freedom.
Wow, for as long as they're still around.
Exactly right. Yep.
Let's go to the phones. Ron, I don't have a lot of time. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead, please.
Just a quick question. And all of the government shutdowns, do the government employees ever lose money? It seems like they're always just on a paid vacation. And when they settle the issues, et cetera, they get back pay or whatever. Just that question.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. That's the case, isn't it?
Well, in this case, what is at risk is not a government shutdown. A government shutdown comes when Congress fails to pass a spending bill. In this case, it's just there wouldn't be a government shutdown unless that's how the Treasury Department decided to satisfy the debt. So this is a debt payment crisis, and this is just their ability to spend money. And that can come in a lot of different ways. For example, a bond to the United States government could be declared bankrupt, and then they could issue another bond to the public to raise money. So that would be one way of handling some of the debt, because the United States government can forfeit on its own bonds, and that's not a declaration. That can happen, for example, in government pension funds. But you're correct. Government. My father passed his enrolled agent test with one simple principle: government always wins. That was his GAW principle. And he passed most of it because the GAW principle is so true in all of the legislation that gets passed.
It's pretty remarkable, but I think that Ron is exactly right, because we keep hearing that people got all their back pay restored and they essentially had a long vacation. So I don't cry for them.
No.
David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. Really fascinating, great insights. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.